steps occupy the entire planetary system. ومجاهدة من ساجن عندنا إن شاء الله خير ساشن وطنينة أصلاش يوبين أما هو فيش نبرا يا كشنا بشتايا بطلي شريمتي باكتي ويدانتا سوامن إجناني أما ستسار سواتي ديفي غورباني بچاني نفشي شاشوني فاري فاشتاري سواني جاء شري كشنا شايتانيا پربو نتناندا شوي ديتا غرادا شوي فاسري غورباكي ويني هري كشنا 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 هري هري Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. So, Bali Maharaj in a serious dilemma here. He could have said that I thought you were taking three dwarf steps. Because I saw you as a dwarf and I thought you're going to do that. And then on the other hand, the Lord could have said, we didn't discuss that. Whatever steps I'm taking, we haven't discussed it. So there's two important points we'll discuss here. One is vows and fruitfulness, and the other one is the planetary system. A little geography of the universe. First, I'll discuss the vows and promises and how it's important and at what point can we break them. This was the age of truthfulness, Satyaga, and the age of truthfulness. A man is bound by his words. Whenever he makes a promise, then he executes it. He fulfills it. See? The age of truthfulness. And this is one of the pillars of religion, truthfulness, austerity, cleanliness, and mercifulness. It is the pillar that is still standing today. Dharma is, it's said that Dharma has one leg, and that leg is truthfulness that is still standing. See? And it is very important for us to understand. In those days, men used to make vows, and they would say, the mountains may crumble, the ocean may dry up, the planets may fall from their orbit, but my promise will not change, will not waver. And there are many, many exalted personalities like this, have went through much trials. I mean, this is a serious position for Bali. The Lord had covered the upper planetary system with two steps. In fact, it said that his toe actually pierced the covering of the universe. And so he said, where shall I place my third step? And like I said, that Bali could have objected. But this also brought up the great quality of Bali Maharaj. This is where he did not hesitate, but he said, place your third step on my head, my Lord, because that's the only place that's left. See? Place your third step on my head. And this makes Bali Maharaj an exalted personality. See? I mean, for us, we would have backed off in, you know, so many ways. You know, be scared, whatever. When we're facing dilemmas and serious situation, we backed off easily. I'll cite two examples of two great kings that were in some really precarious position. And they really They really stood their grounds. Like Bhagavatam spoke of exalted kings like Prithu and Harishchandra, Maharaj Yudhisthira, Shibi, Rantidev. Sometimes it's good to know the pastimes of these personalities. In fact, this is one of the topics, the kings, the coming either from the solar dynasty or the lunar dynasty. Maharaj Shibi, once he was performing a jagya, and a pigeon suddenly flew and landed on his thigh. And he asked the king for protection. The hawk is chasing me. Please protect me. And Maharaj Shibi agreed to protect the pigeon. But then suddenly the hawk came and said that you're protecting my food. That's the pigeon. That's how you say it, pigeon or pigeon. Yeah, it's that's my food, and you're protecting it. How would I be able to feed my family? The king said, but I have given my word to the pigeon. I'll give you whatever other meat you like, buffalo, deer, whatever. But the hawk said, no, I want the pigeon. The king said, well, I give my word, and I cannot withdraw that. What else can I do? The hawk said, well, the only other thing you can do is if you cut your flesh and match it with the weight of the pigeon, only that would satisfy me. So the king said, all right. He cut off a piece of his leg and put it on one side of the scale. And the pigeon was on the other side. And the pigeon was a little heavier. He cut again. The pigeon was a little heavier and he cut. It stated that Maharaj Shibi actually cut all the flesh from his body and put it on one side of that scale, and the pigeon was still a little heavy. Then he just threw his remaining skeletal on the scale. See? Then at that time, the hawk transformed himself into Indra and said that there's no more of a great personality than you. No one would have done this. Cut his own flesh just to save the pigeon. See? So that was a trying situation, and I think that at least today no one would even attempt to cut a finger to do that. There is another personality called Harishchandra. I'll give you this example, then I'll discuss a little about morality and how Lord Krishna says, when can you break morality? And maybe I cite a few other examples. And then I'll discuss our vows, the vows that we've made to our spiritual master, the vow we've made at marriage and so forth. So Harishchandra, Vishwamitra had perform a sacrifice for him. And after the sacrifice, Vishwamitra asks him, who owns the world? And Harishchandra said, the Brahmanas. Indeed, in the Manusmriti, it stated that the Brahmana owns everything. Some devotee had given a class a few weeks ago and said that. And so Vishwamitra said, well, then give me your kingdom, because Vishwamitra is an exalted Brahmana. He said, give me your kingdom. And Harishchandra said, okay. Then Vishwamitra said, who's your guru? He said, you. He said, well, you have to give me Guru Dakshina also. So Harishchandra had already given Vishwamitra his whole kingdom. But now he wants Guru Dakshina from him. He said, but I don't have anything. I gave you everything, including my royal robes and everything. He said, you have your wife and son. You can sell them. So Harishchandra took them into the marketplace And after a long time, he finally managed to sell his wife and son. And he got a little money. But it was still not enough for Vishwamitra. He said, this is not enough. You have to get some more. Then Harishchandra said, I'll try to get a job and repay you. And he searched for a long time and he couldn't find anything. Eventually he found a job at a crematorium, right, the keeper of the crematoriums. And he was working there, so he was collecting whenever someone will take the dead to burn or bury or whatever, he would collect the money, and that was his job. But his wife was sold. But what had happened, his wife and son, his son was bitten by a snake, and he died. And she took the boy to the crematorium. And Harishchandra could have actually recognized them. But it is his duty to collect fees also. He said, you cannot pass here without paying a fee. And she said, I don't have any money. I don't have any money. And Harishchandra said, well, you cannot pass. Then the only thing she had was a piece of cloth that was left when Vishwamitra had when he had sold her. One piece of cloth, and then she was taking that out to give Harishchandra. Then at that point, Indra appeared and said that there is no more of a personality like you within this universe. See, there is no more of an exalted personality. And actually he took Harishchandra and his wife to the heavenly planet. He brought back the son to life and put him as the ruler of the kingdom. So these are two cases of extreme trial. See, just like the one that Bali is actually going through. And they passed their tests. So we remember Yudhishthira was asking Bhishma, how is it that Harishchandra was such an exalted person and he's in the heavenly planet and Pandu is still in Yamaloka? What has Harishchandra did to reach the heavenly planet? And so this was one of the story that was told. I'll recite another case of where morality becomes immorality. Once Arjuna drew his sword to kill Maharaj Yudhishthira because he had taken a secret vow to that whoever insulted his Gandiva or criticized his Gandiva, he would kill that person. And so after Karna had mangled Maharaj Yudhishthira, Arjuna went to see him, but Yudhishthira was very frustrated and he said, Karna is still alive, he has mangled me and you have your Gandiva, but you're still, you know, and you're still moving confidently. You vow that you'll kill him. Why don't you give the Gandiva to some other king? See? And then Arjuna immediately took out his sword to kill Maharaj Yudhishthira. And then Lord Krishna says, I don't see an enemy here. Why are you drawing your sword? He said, He said, my brother has insulted my Gandiva. Then Lord Krishna says, you have to know what is morality and what is immorality and when to apply it. Sometimes your morality can be immorality. And if you don't know how to apply it, then you can commit a great sinful act. He said once there was a sage who promised never to tell a lie. And while he was meditating, some villagers passed by him. He actually saw them pass by him. And then later on, some dacoits came and asked the sage, where have those citizens, where have those villagers gone? And he said they went by the bushes. The dacoits actually went and plundered all their wealth and killed them. And he said for that act of truthfulness of the sage, he had to see hell. His morality of practicing the truth was actually immoral. See? And so you have to know at what point to upkeep your morality, or when your morality becomes immoral. See? And then he explained how he can act in a way as to observe his vow, but at the same time not commit a sinful act. And so he told Arjuna he could insult Yudhishthira, which is as good as killing him, and then beg his forgiveness. And he did that. See? So this brings us to our own situation. We have made a vow to the spiritual master, to the deities, to the fire, to the elements, to chant 16 rungs and follow the four regulative principles. See? And so, only in serious, critical situation, maybe we should, we can flood in fulfilling the vow. Like if you're very sick, for example, you might not be able to chant your rungs for the day, then maybe when you get healthy, you could try to do it. Or at that point, you can even try to chant in your mind, as sometimes my Guru Maharaj does, you know, because, you know, he's sickly, and sometimes it's very difficult, see? So at that point, you could even chant in your mind. Or if you're stranded in an icy place and you cannot get any food, at that point you may eat meat. Or like, for example, people were locked in rooms in the hurricane in Haiti. Sometimes they hear other people died or whatever, they may even have to eat them. Those extreme cases, you may have, you may break your vow. But on normal circumstances, we should not. Another serious vow that we've taken is our marriage vow. And this is the one I want to get at, because I've been doing some research on the internet, and I found that people that follow Vedic culture, well, of course, especially like in India and Nepal, the divorce rate is very low, like 1% or less. Those that are within the outskirts of the, like that are following Islamic and Buddhist culture, the rate is a little higher, but not that higher. Like about maybe 5-6%. But in the West, I mean, it's ridiculous. It's between 45 and 55%. 55, 45 to 55%. And but even within our society in the West also, especially in America, that rate is very high. It's even higher than the national rate. And this is mind-boggling. It's disturbing. Because Srila Prabhupada wanted this movement to be an example to the world. And then when this happens, this is not a good example. And so we have to re-evaluate things and try to see where we're flowing, where is the problem. And also for the older devotees, they have to try to help the younger devotees. It's very important. I mean, a lot of the older devotees, they're pretty stable. I mean, you could see a lot of the senior devotees, they're stable in their marriage life. But a lot of the younger devotees, they're critical. And so the vow at marriage, I have vowed to take this lady as my wedded wife for life. Or I vow to take this man as my husband, you know, for life. But then, within a short time, some misunderstanding, and then there's separation. See? So this is a vow that we have to reevaluate and try to understand. Even Jesus said that the only time that a divorce is allowed is if there's fornication or infidelity. But yet we've seen that it's gone out of proportion. See? But anyhow, we can contemplate this point especially and think of ways that we could assist the situation. So the other important point is the planetary system. And it's stated, Srila Prabhupada wrote that the according to the Vedic description of the planetary system, all the planets move from east to west. According to the scientists, the planets move from west to east. And we know that there is serious controversy between science and our understanding and findings. There are some findings in science that are pretty accurate and are pretty good. But then there's others that are pretty much speculative. And so we should be able to know the difference and able to know when to accept what's true and what is not true. For example, the age of the earth, they state that the age of the earth is like 4.6 billion years. See? But from our calculation, the age of the earth is like almost 2 billion years. And how do we arrive at that? It's stated that a day of Brahma, the lower planetary systems are all annihilated, or they're covered with water. And then the night goes, and then the next day they come back again. So we know for this day of Brahma, Brahma's six Manus have passed, and we are on the seventh. So six Manus times each Manu reigns for like 308 million years, times six would give you like a little over 1,800,000,000 years. And then we have the 27 cycles of the seventh Manu, which gives you close to 2 billion years. So we can say that the age of the earth is like almost 2 billion years. They have it at 4.6 billion. That is actually the end of Brahma's lifetime. See, so we can say that's not pretty accurate on their part. Then but the age of the universe is a little different. They have it at 13.6 billion years. But the age of the universe is the age of is Brahma's age, which is 311 trillion years. But Brahma is now like 51 years old, so the age of the universe would be a little over 155 trillion years. See? That's how we arrive at our calculation. But there are some other technical parts, like the moon and the sun dilemma, where it's stated that the moon is higher than the sun. See? And so for us, we know at least the moon that circles our planet is 238 or 240,000 miles away from the sun, away from the earth. And we know the sun is 93 million miles away from the earth. So if the moon is 240,000 miles away from the earth and the sun is 93 million miles, how is it possible that the moon can be higher than the sun? Can anyone take a shot at that? Anyone wants to?
Hare Krishna. Who is saying 230,000 miles away?
Well, the scientists are saying that, and it is a pretty accurate calculation, because through maths we can do those calculations. They're pretty advanced in some of the closer planets. We have to accept them. But I give an explanation. How is it possible? The moon actually circles the earth, but the earth actually revolves around the sun. So it means that the earth is 93 million miles away from the sun. And since the moon is revolving around the earth, and the moon is 240 million miles away from the earth, the moon can be 93,240,000 miles away from the sun. See, in the solar sphere, in the solar circle, the sun is considered to be the center of the solar system, and then you have Mercury, Venus, the Earth, and going in that way. Of course, within our the Bhagavatam or description have it a little different. But if we accept that the earth is encircling the sun, the moon is encircling the earth, that would give you the idea that the moon is farther away from the sun than the earth. You see, also it's how we make our statement, rather than saying that the moon is farther away from the sun than the earth. It's from the earth than the sun. See? And of course you have the other planets really. A lot of these planets, they're somewhat accurate or close to what the Vedic literature describes. Time is actually going. I can't really run through it. But I mean, the idea was that the Lord had to go through all his planetary system to make his two steps. Right? Let us say you have from the earth you have the moon, the stars, Venus, Mercury, Mars, Jupiter, Saturn. Then you have the Sapta Lok, where the Sapta Rishis are. Then you have Dhruva Lok, Mahar Lok, Jana Lok, Tapa Lok, Sata Lok, local Vaikuntha planet. And then the covering of the universe. But then Lord on the earth, then farther away is the sun, Rahu. Then you have Siddha Lok, Charna Lok. And then you have Atala Lok, Vitala, Sutala, Jatala, Mahatala, Rasatala, Patala. And then at the end of that, you have like the hellish planets, Narakalo. See? And then below that is the Garbhodakashayi ocean. See? Where the Lord is resting there as an Antashesha. See? So anyhow, from the step to the earth to the covering of the universe is a vast distance. I didn't really copy it really, but it's unbelievable height. But this also shows the power of the Lord. He made with two steps, he covered that. And briefly, it would take us if we were to travel even with it. At the speed of light, it might take us millions of years to reach there. See? Light travels at 186,000 miles per second. See? Like 6 million miles per minute or something like that. Anyhow, so that would take a long time. And the Lord did that in an instant. See? In an instant. And so this puzzled the Bali Maharaj. He wasn't expecting this. See, he wasn't expecting this. And so the Bhagavatam says that his body became pale, you know. I mean, he was thinking that the Lord might take three ordinary steps. See? But he was not expecting that. I'll stop here. There was not much of a purport, so I had to speak a little differently, but I hope I haven't deviated from Vedic conclusions in any way. If there's any question or comments. Okay. Srimad Bhagavatam ki.